Morning. So coming up to Purim. Purim is very much, I think nowadays more than ever, Mamash speaks to us and comes to us for various reasons. I don't know if people over here have heard this idea. I'm not going to go through it today. But one of the things I've been doing in my Rosh Hashanah is to go around to university campuses, and we show them there's a very interesting code in the Megillah, which you might have heard of, how in the Megillah it's hinted to how in the days of how by the Asaris B'nai Haman, and when it says the Asaris B'nai Haman in the Megillah, there's a few interesting points that it says. First of all, it says that Achashverosh gave an edict to kill the Jew, that the Jews were able to kill the enemies. And it says that they killed Asaris B'nai Haman, and then we read it, but that's what's supposed to be. We were scared I was going to say the whole thing in one breath. And then after that, it says in Amalek Chayim, Esther asks Achashverosh, what can I do? And Esther says, let the Yidin and Shushan do as they would do tomorrow, as they would do the Macha, and let Asaris B'nai Haman harogu. And what's interesting to note out is that if they've already been killed, why are you trying to say, Asaris B'nai Haman, Tolu Alo Eitz, why are you hanging them? Why is Esther requesting to hang Asaris B'nai Haman, 10 sons that were already killed? It doesn't make sense. Poshup Shah in the beginning. So there's a very famous idea from Rachel Ben Weissmandel, and I've been giving a presentation on this. Had I known that people are still looking for this as new information, I would have shown this. However, Rachel Ben Weissmandel shows an incredible thing. He says that if you look at those three small letters in the Asaris B'nai Haman, the three small letters come out to Tof, the Tof of the first son of Haman, the Shin and a Zion, and it alludes to the year of 1946, which was the year, and the exact date was Yeshana Rab, the day where Umos Olim are judged. On the 10th of October 1946, the Nuremberg trials famously accused 10 of the most famous Nazis in the world, 11 of the most famous Nazis in the world. One of them committed suicide the night before, the other 10 were hung on that day, which was very strange because they normally get electrocuted. And it's a very clear sign in the Megillah about how the Jewish triumph over Amalek. How you see that even in the Megillah, it says in the way of Megillah, in its hiddenness, it shows how in the future, Lamocha, they are going to hang 10 of the Zara of Amalek who are trying to kill us. So this is often something which we've shown, is that there's a few other Ramazim. What's interesting is that one of the sons of Haman really had 10 sons and one daughter who jumped very famously, Ovel B'chofer Roish. She killed herself after throwing the bucket over Haman, which she thought was Matai. And what's interesting is actually there was 11 Nazis at the time that were sentenced to death, and one of them killed themselves, and that's alluded to by the 11th child of Haman. And often when I go around and I show this to the non-from audiences that we come across, so they're in astonishment. They're like, wow, so who could have made up such a thing? There's further Gemara, also in the Gemara in Megillah that speaks about Germania Shel Edom, which obviously is referring to Germany. It was made up of 300 Malchiyos. at the time, the Third Reich was made up of 300 states, something which you couldn't make up. And what I say to, what often I say to them is, this is incredible proof that, obviously, the Megillah, the Torah, was written by Hashem. But the truth is that I tell them that this is not, I believe in the Torah for other reasons. But I'll tell you, one of the things which often they feed back to me is they say that we don't need this in order to believe that it's powerful and is running the world. Because if you look at the craziness that's going on in the world, if you look now, you look at the Zara of Amalek, the Iran, the proxies of Iran who are trying to attack Klal Yisrael, and you see a crazy story about how the whole Eretz Yisrael is at war, and Eden over here, Jews, unaffiliated Jews are feeling scared for their lives. I go into university campuses, I see the way that it affects the Eden over there. This is a story which can't, and not only that, it's affecting the liberal camp and something which you can't make up. It's a story which is mamish a Purim story remaking itself. And one of the things, I think as a way of introduction, one of the most unique things about the Megillah is that this is our code, and something which we'll speak about. The code that we have for Golus is the Megillah. The Megillah was given to us for a way how to see Yad HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Golus. Esther and Atena Minayin, Vanechi Aste Pana Be'yemahu, speaking about the Golus, speaking about the future of Klal Yisrael, and that's going to be the blick into the future of Klal Yisrael. I'll go over here. There's the Reb Shimshon Pinkus explains how this is mamish of the Yom Tov of Purim. Purim is an idea where everything etzem could have been understood as what was happening at the time could have been perfectly well explained. He says, but the whole idea why it's called Purim, Hashem HaPur, we could have chosen many names for Purim. The Purim was a very minor detail, the fact that we happened to draw lots, such as Shem Pinkas, because a lottery is the epitome of seeing Yad Hashem when there isn't Yad Hashem, when you can't see Yad Hashem. If you want to know, if you want to leave something up to Shem Shmaim, when the Shvatim had to leave, they were supposed to be Chedek Eretz Yisrael, and when they couldn't come to an agreement of where it would go to, the only way to do it was via Pur, via Lot. Why? Because that's the epitome of Yad Hashem when in times of Hester. So the Bachar Yisroel says a beautiful moshul to bring this out. He says that if I've got it over here in the Loshon, but I'll read it out. He said that there were two people who were given a job to be able to guard a camp. Right? He says that they both had the same job. The first person, he used the flashlight because his job was to identify who was going to come, identify against potential risks. Says the second, he didn't have flashlights. What did he do? He had to listen with his ears. He had to see if he can hear their voices. So there's no shaila that the person who has a greater level of clarity is the person with the flashlight, because he can maisa see who's coming. He can shine his torch. He can see. He can recognize, is this a friend or a foe? Is this someone who's potentially close to us? He says lemaisa. If you think about it, the first person isn't really exercising his koyches. He's just using a flashlight, you can see them. The second person had to train himself to listen to the voices, to listen to the sounds, to be able to attune himself, to work out, is this person someone who's going to be a potential risk? So he said, and this person now, because of what he's doing now, he now has a new skill. He's now developed a new skill of being listening to voices, which he developed in the dark, and now he can use this his entire life. He says, the Yidden and Golos particularly, we don't have clarity, we don't have it, and we don't have clarity, but what we've gained in its place is an ability to be able to hear in the darkness, be able to hear to attune, and possibly one of the things which us as children of Golos have been able to receive, which maybe they wouldn't have gone, this is something which we'll tap on, maybe they didn't have, even in the days of Kabbalah Satayra, even in the days when there was Giloy, is this ability to be able to see Yad Hashem in the Nistar. Now this idea of having an extra koyach. What's specific about Purim? Why is Purim shokel against Yom Kippur? Why is Purim? We said Purim is going to be something which is going to be kept forever. The Yosef Mizarov, right? It's going to be something which for Klai Yisrael will always keep. What's unique about Purim that is going to be so well kept for the future? And this idea lies in this moshel of the Pachad Yitzchok, that really, because us as Bnei Golus, we were given, Purim gave us an extra koyach to be able to see, or to be able to listen, and use senses that we don't have to be able to see Yad Hashem in the darkness. Where is this said in the Torah? So says the Maharal, this is something we should like to open up with. Says the Maharal, this idea is mentioned, is Marunus to in a very famous idea. It says, Kofa Hanayim Har Kegigis. So it says, Hodot, it says, Kimu Vikibra Yehudim, that the Klal Yisrael, the times of Purim, got up and they were Kimu Vikiblu. And the Gemara says, Kimu Masha Kiblu Kva, they were Mekayim, what they had already accepted. It says, Afal Pi, that they accepted it in the days of Rabbeinu, Torah, in times of Purim, Hodot Kiblua Bimei Purim. And the question, which everyone asks, is what happened, right? The Gemara says, Mekan, Moidor Rabbe Lo Yiraisa, over here, the Yidden had a Moidor Rabbe Lo Yiraisa, they had an ability, a get out of jail free card. They had an ability to say, at the time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Kofa Aleim HaKigingas, he gave it to us, and by coercion, he held a mountain over our heads. It wasn't of our own free will. When Purim came along and they accepted it Mirotzayim, and with Ava, at that point, Klal Yisrael were already able to say, Klal Yisrael no longer had this get out of jail free card. They never had this excuse. They never had this Moidor Rabba, and therefore now was the real Kabbalah Satorah, which is why we know that Purim is so important to be able to learn. It's important to use it to be Dovik to learn the Torah because this was the specific day. Also, the Medrash says something even more. The Medrash says the Mishli says Shekol Hamayitim Yir B'Teinim. It's the second column. Shekol Hamayitim Yir B'Teinim. V'Yimei Purim Lo Yiyu Nevtalim La'Olam. Purim will never be bottled forever. Shenema V'Yimei Purim Eile Lo Yavur Mitoicha Yehudim V'Zichron LaYosef Mizaram. That's an interesting idea. What does it mean that it won't be bottled? It also says, when the question of what it means really betailing. So the this is something which we'll touch on later. The Meshech Chochma explains it with a novel way. What does it mean loy betailing? But Pashtus, the way we understand it now, is loy betailing means that there's something which Purim has, which is eternal, which will always be there for the future. So with the help, we'd like to bring out a few of these ideas and try and understand particularly this Maharal. We said the Maharal says that Kimu v'kiblu masha kiblu kvar. This means that what was given to Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai was something which Klal Yisrael had never received before. Now the question really is, the question which I guess everyone asks is, What's this Moedor Rabbe Lo Yiraisa? What, Klal Yisrael, a Madriga like that, we're trying to look for excuses, we were trying to get out of it, what was going on over here? And he says, I don't understand. If already the Rabban asked this question, I don't have it on the sheets, but I'll read it out. The Rabban says, Koshli, Mechima Kabbalah Zu, Oysa, Misoifi Shalom, Tchalosai. If before Achashverosh came along they weren't commanded, then Lomanetshu, we know that they were punished. If they had a Moedor Rabba, meaning they had an excuse, so why didn't they use their excuse? why didn't they come out when it came to the Egel, when it came to all the Baronis that happened in the middle? Why didn't they turn around and say, It was forced. We never really accepted it. The Ramban asked this question. If you say, yeah, it was the Maisa, they were being over Hashem's Ratzon in Cain, Batlam and Azu. If that's the case, then what's the point of the? You know, if the reason why they were Mechuyim was because they Hakadosh Baruch Hu and Maisa told them you have to keep the Torah, then what's the point of this Moidah, this excuse that they had in their hand? It was not going to help them anyway. So why do they need Purim to kind of to fix it in for Doris? So he says an interesting mahalach in Ramban. He says mikol makom nosno lehem haaretz elak nishi kaima Torah. He says they knew when they were given Eretz Yisrael that with Eretz Yisrael came the Torah. It was a tanai. I mean, they knew that if they wanted to, it wasn't pshat they were just given the Torah without any clauses. They were given the Torah, and it was given in a way of kofar lehem hakigin, because it was given with a way which looked like kavaja. But in the Maisa, they knew that when they were given Eretz Yisrael, it was attached to the Torah, and they knew they're going to have to fight Umas Ha'olam. So, but they weren't trying to say, says the Rambam, they weren't trying to say with the Moedah that we don't want it. That's not what they were saying. Only they were saying that this idea, when they said, Kol Hashadim Hashem Nase V'Nishma, it could have been understood that I will do everything you want as long as we're in Eretz Yisrael. But the second that we're not in Eretz Yisrael, then okay, we don't have you. This was given because we knew we were on the journey towards Eretz Yisrael. The second we're not going to Eretz Yisrael, okay, so I'm no longer bound by the terms and conditions of this transaction. You're giving us the Torah because of a specific reason, I'm no longer bound by it. Says the Ram, therefore, when Klal Yisrael first went into Golus, therefore there was, then suddenly it came along and they said, okay, Kumto is the only reason that you gave us that the Torah at the time wasn't because we were going to Eretz Yisrael, it wasn't bound to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It has an eternal contract. If that's the case, what are the terms and conditions of this contract? That was still by force. That's why, says the Ramban, that's why they turned around at this point and they said, we're able to get out of this. And on that they turned around and they saw. Then he says, what did they see by Purim? What taught them on Purim? Why did they come along with Purim, and at that point, makabel the Torah, ma'ava mirotzo? What was special about it? Okay, so they saw that they were in Chutz Laaretz and they had to, but what forced them at the time? At the time, there was no, if they needed a kofel lehem haka gigis at the beginning in order to be makabel the Torah, when they were getting Eretz Yisrael, so what happened in Purim? So he says, by Purim, when they won them, mimavos l'chayim, if that's what happened, they took a hindsight look, and they saw, wait a second, we thought that Chas Hashem only happens in Eretz Yisrael. Now we're in Shushan, and we can see the world events going on, and Hashem's name is not even written in the Megillah, and Hashem's hand doesn't even. And nevertheless, they looked at this Megillah, and the Megillah screamed out Yad Hashem. Suddenly, they realized, if that's the case, the Torah is real. They realized really what I was alluding to before. They realized that when you see Yad Hashem in the Golos, we have this extra look, this extra outlook, this extra kibluah that possibly previous Doris have never had before. They're able to say Yad Hashem, Hashem is even Menahel, Hashem is even on top of the world happenings, even when it's not Eretz Yisrael. And that they've got no longer an excuse for. Until then, they could say, "Kofal emharke gigis, you forced us to keep the Torah. Now we can no longer keep the Torah because there's no longer any force." At this point, Klal Yisrael said, "Wait a second, you've got no excuse. You can see, look around in the world. You can see that Kodesh Baruch Hu has been manial the world in a way where you can't make up this story. And not only that, I'm not even telling you I'm here." They looked at the Megillah and they said, "The Megillah is an ultimate proof that the Torah is." That the Torah is endless, and a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and therefore they have to recover the Torah. So and Rav David Cohen brings over here He brings a moshal from the Gaon, a very famous moshal. We've heard this. The Gaon doesn't say many moshalim, but the Gaon says this moshal. This is how he brings it out. He says that there was a king, and the king had a son, and this son was Oval Gzeres HaMelech. So what happened? The son went into the son was Goyla. He went on his travels. Has heard this moshal before, and what happened? The king was scared by his son and daughter. So what did he do? He set his guards up to hide behind the bushes. And as the prince was wandering through the bushes, suddenly a lion came along, and suddenly one of his sorin came along out of the blue and killed them. And he thought it was a happenstance. He thought it was a mikra. And then it happened again. It happened again until eventually he realized. It happened so many times, he looked around and he realized he saw all the king's henchmen hiding in the bushes, and he realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu guarded them. He says, so too Klal Yisrael, dafka in a matzav of Hester Ponin, dafka in the Megillah of Hester, in Alechas Teponai, therefore we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us, that gives us an extra advantage. So, now this idea, Be'etzem, although the Ramban says it, the Maharal brings it out in a beautiful way. The Maharal says that sorry, just one second. He says, he asks the same question. He says, how is it possible that we know Kabbalah Satorah, the Klal Yisrael, we said, Le Yosef Mizara. Klal Yisrael would never ever back out on Kabbalah Satorah, they would never. So he asks the same question. He says, what was the Midorah? How on earth could they have said that they're going to back out? How could it be that they said they were never bound by this? So the Maharal says that if you look at he says, psychologically, we know that it's very hard. We know this as parents. Now, the second you tell a child who wants to volunteer to do something, they're very happy to do it. The second you tell them you have to tidy your room, the second you tell them you have to do something, you have to go to the shop, the second we make something imperative, people automatically recoil. He says, Klal Yisrael were gripped by, maybe I'm paraphrasing to some degree, he says, Klal Yisrael to some degree were gripped by poshut psychology. Psychologically, they were very happy to keep the Torah when it was their own free will. What happened when suddenly it was kofanei hakigis? Suddenly they said, wait a second, this is not something which I'm comfortable with, this is not, maybe I can get out of it. The second it became mukhrat. Now why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if that's the case, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu be kofaleim hakigis? Why did he give it to them in that world? So he says, the way he brings it out is he says that there's a difference between a ma'anus and a mafata. Yeah? If someone's ma'anus someone, then the Torah says, lo yochel atzisu nomis. They can never get out of this. They can never get out of the relationship. He has to marry them. There's a mafata, the person doesn't need to give chamishim zuz and you're scot-free. He says, why? He says, because the Ma'anus has shown with his Maisa of being Ma'anus that this is something which he needs. This is something which he put in force into it. He says, well, the second there was a force attached to what he did, he was saying that this is something which is hechrechi, it's something which has to be, something which is non-negotiable. If it's non-negotiable, you're stuck with this deal forever. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have given the Torah in a way where he told them, he let them have their own free will to be able to accept the Torah or not. He says, but Lamaisa, had he given that to Klal Yisrael, he said it would have looked as if this was a negotiable deal. If you want, you can go for it. If you want, you can back out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure that when he gave Klal Yisrael the Torah, there was an element of kafir involved. There was an element of forcing. Because Klal Yisrael had to know that although this has the illusion that you're able to receive this, that this is something which looks like it's there's two sides to the story. It's possible you can live a life without it. You can't live a life without it. Lemaisa, there's a non-negotiable. In fact, I can't remember who says this, but one of the possibly an idea why it says where's the shom? It should say poyteke verasem. Shom teke verasem means that you think that there's going to be a life outside of Torah. Shom teke verasem, wherever it is, that's going to be okay, but that's not going to be a life which is worth living. That's not going to be a life which is possible, because even though it looks like there's a choice over here, the Maisa, you can only be accepting the Torah has to be a dover hechri, it has to be something which is non-negotiable. So it comes out that according to Mara, the Avada Matan Torah was Kabbalah Barotzi, because they said Nasa Venishma. How? So he says, if that's the case, what was added? What was added with Purim? He said, if what came out was that there was non-negotiable, it was that so when the Klal Yisrael were given the Torah in the days of Matan Torah, then what came afterwards was non-negotiable. So what did they accept more in the Purim story that they'd never accepted beforehand? So we don't have time to see the whole thing, but he brings a beautiful Reb Elia Lopian. He says, Reb Elia Lopian says that people, I don't have it on the sheet. I don't think it's based on a Meshech Chochma. We have to miss that out due to timing. But the Meshech Chochma says that we do have on the sheet. Actually, we'll read it out quickly. The Meshech Chochma says that to who's just given to the Sogan Yun of Roku, who don't have Greek, but Turk, you must have Massacre Shom Barret. So Massacre Shom Barret. But in your Major who, do a Marnusha, Nahnu, but Sogan Yun of Oz, Hayinu Yukhin in the Kaim, Al Kusha, and Hogo and Kiss, Mr. Teres Peteva, Oz, in Yukhin in the Snag, Al Piatero. Or Ble Esther, Kasham, Kashet, Soga, Hoysa, Mr. Teres, we saw the Hovdu, Hoyu, Avdia Kashmir, Shmokhozo is Moshe Nafshom, and the Kabbalah Shleno. What the Meshech Chochma says that they received something additional in the days of Achashverosh that they hadn't received previously in the story of Kabbalah Satorah. He says in the story of Kabbalah Satorah, It was assumed that because they were on this high madriga, that's when the Torah was relevant for them. Klal Yisrael could have then turned around and said that the Torah is very relevant for us when we're in the top of the spiritual ladder. We've come out of Mitzrayim. We've come out of Kriyas Yamsuf. But how do we know that in Yomei Achashverosh, when we're in the depths, we're in Golos, we're in the Matzah of Hester, how do we know that we're going to that we can still have this the same relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Says Reb Elia Lopian that what we see is that when they were Mekabeling in them, they saw that the Torah is unchanging. The Torah, the same Torah which has the same imperative when the Torah was given, has the same imperative in the future for Golos. And what comes out is that, I'm sorry, I have to skip a few things just because I didn't time myself so well. So it comes out that when eventually the Eden Klal Yisrael did accept the Torah, when they accepted the Torah and the Matzah Hest upon him, it comes out that their Megala, that the original Kfir was also nothing, because Klal Yisrael could have turned around and said, and they could have said that the whole original Kabbalah Satorah was also in the Matzah of Kfir. We couldn't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We couldn't see the Yad Hashem as Ba'avu Baratzin. He showed himself to us by being Kofaleim Har, as if this is a relationship which is Dafka built around Hester, around not seeing how Kadosh Baruch Hu loves and how Kadosh Baruch Hu is able to beguile the world. He says, when they eventually, all the years later, were mekabelit beratzayim, then suddenly they had that aha moment. They said, wait a second, if we're going to mekabel the Torah now, and we're in Godless, and we don't see Yad Hashem in anything that we're doing, and nevertheless, this is a real Kabbalah Shleima, because we'll be able to see it. Not only is it Barotson, but also it's in the time of Hester, we have that ultimate clarity that we didn't have beforehand. And in some way, this turns around, and it shows us how when we're going through Golos, we're very much clouded by the Hester, and everyone says this time's Hester upon it. What I think everyone, what the Mesh Chochma, or Eilat Piyan, or the Maharal, or the Gaon, what they're all saying is one thing. Is they're saying that what we have in Golos is a superpower. Klal Yisrael, years and years and years and years, had the Torah. And they were mekabel it ba'av, they were mekabel it with MS, some of them they were mekabel it with Rotson. But nevertheless, they still had an element, all those years, they still had an element of Modor Abul Aris, they still said, maybe there's something missing. What we have now, what the Purim was Megala for Doris, and we know that Purim is the Hester, which is the beginning of all the Golios. What it was Megala to us is what Klal Yisrael have nowadays, and this is what I turn around, and in some form, in such detail, I turn around when I speak to students around the country, I tell them the same thing. What you see nowadays, when you see Yad Hashem in the biggest Hester, you see the way the incredible stories that are coming out of Gaza, you see the incredible stories, you see the actors of Klal Yisrael, you see the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu from one day to the next turned the whole world on its head and made the whole world create a story which is impossible to write. Who would have ever thought of a story where the liberal and the wokes are able to come and team up with the most extremists in the world, and the crux of the matter is that the people, the central peace people in this story are some Nebuchadnezzar around the world. This story is obviously Yad Hashem. We're just waiting with Hashem for the Yeshua Hashem Kerem. Thank you. 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 Thank you.